The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Well, I think we should just bring on Paulie, better known as Burt Young.
They're talking about a movie called Creed.
You know what, though? You better have Paulie in that movie.
If they dump me, it'll be sacrilegious.
Hi, Mario Lopez. Mario, how's it going tonight?
Hey, I'm doing great. And you get a lot of Hollywood hotties getting on you, or what? And you were like a Miley Cyrus. That shit works. You know what I mean? You
look like I haven't known her since she was a little girl. She's a little sweet, and, she's grown up.
Oh, yeah. Hell, yeah, she has.
Mr. Gianni Russo played Carlo Rizzi in the original Godfather.
James Caan.
He broke two of your ribs, you saying?
With the kicking when I crawled out?
Yeah.
Going to the fire hydrant?
Mm-hmm.
We want to introduce Mr. Bach Rutten.
How many bouncers did you take out at that one time in Sweden?
There were five of them, so I had every one I dropped, but they were just coming back up,
Mario, hands ready. Mario, how are you this evening?
Wonderful, guys. Greg, one question. Yes. If I call you the rambling freak, will you squash me like a bug?
And Greg, I know you and I are both just tremendous baseball fans, and now with the baseball season, right here, it's I can't even describe how passionate I am that we're going to be able to introduce one of the greatest ball players of all time joining us right now on Extreme Radio, Mr. Cub, Ernie Banks. Ernie, thank you so much for joining Greg and I today.
Thank you very much. Nice to be on the show, and I know you all are taking yoga, aren't you?
We're going to take yoga. We're going to take your... Ernie has recommended that Greg and I take yoga, and how could I say no to, the first Battle Hall of Famer here? So, Ernie, where do I even start? Wow. You've had an unbelievable career spanning three decades. Your famous saying, let's play two. You always had a great time on the field, and you played in the most beautiful ballpark the game has ever known. How blessed did you feel to, even though maybe winning percentage might not have been up, to play for a great team in a great town like Chicago for the Cubs at Wrigley?
It was sure a wonderful time. I truly enjoyed it. You know, I've been with the Cubs over 50 years now, and it's just been a wonderful place. It's like my home. I wanted to live there. And as all of you know, Wrigley Field is going to be 100 years old in April, next month, April 24th, 100 years old.
Oh, my God. That's a while. Hey, Ernie, you know what I wanted to ask you? You played in the Negro Leagues, right, for 2 years. Did you see any of the great, great ball players from back then? I love baseball. That's my, even though I'm a bodybuilder, I love baseball even better than bodybuilding. I mean, to see some of those great players, even like the Satchel Pages and stuff like that, was that like a totally different thing, for you? I mean, what was that like?
No, it was just wonderful. I really didn't want to leave the Monarchs because they were great guys with a lot of talent. They had a lot of wisdom. I learned a lot from them. I played with Elston Howard. He's one guy, as you know.
Wow.
And I played with Kurt Roberts. He went to the Pittsburgh Pirates. We had quite a few players that were really good enough to play in the major leagues. We had another kid named Gene Richardson, a pitcher. He was a good pitcher. He didn't make it. But a lot of players come out of the league. Charlie Pride was in the league. He was a pitcher at Memphis, and he struck me out one time.
Oh, boy.
But there's a lot of guys that played in the league that were really good players, and they could have played in the major leagues.
Right.
Oh, definitely.
I mean, It's Elston Howard. I grew up a Yankee fan, so you know how I feel. I love Elston Howard. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, a wonderful person. Now, the opposite part of being his life in baseball career, I played on teams that didn't win, and he played on teams that won. So,
yeah, but Ernie, you hit 500 in what was it, 518 or something like that? What was it?
512.
512, brother. Oh, my
512,
God.
512. It was May 12, 1970. I remember that. May 12, 1970. I hit my 500th home run. And boy, wow, what a thrill that was. God, I still remember it, and it was a great thrill.
You got to be the best power hitting shortstop ever. I mean, you did it on the field and everything. You were just Joe and I, when we grew up, I mean, we were, you know, I remember seeing you wishing you were on the Yankees, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, I don't know what to say. I'm like shocked. I'm talking Ernie Banks, you know, to me.
Ernie, the thing that I find incredible, from 57, 4 years consecutively, you hit 40 or more home runs in an era where 20 home runs was considered a good number. I mean, that was just, and you led the league in two of those 4 years, 47 and 41. That was in 58 and 60. I mean, that was an incredible feat at that time, especially we're talking about back then, especially in the NL, pitching was king. So, I mean, how did you get so much power? I don't care, short porch or not, people, Wrigley, that is incredible numbers for anyone to put up anywhere.
Especially a shortstop, Joe.
Of course.
Well, thank
yeah.
you very much. I mean, it was just one of those things where I just played and focused on the game, and I've learned a lot from Gene Baker. I learned a lot from Willie Mays and Hank Aaron.
Oh, my God.
I just learned a lot about the game and how to play it, how to hit the right field. Stan Musial helped me a lot. Ted Williams, Joe DiMaggio. I just was helped with a lot of people. Mostly it was Ralph Kiner. I don't know whether you'll remember him, but Ralph.
Oh, of course you remember Ralph Kiner.
Absolutely.
Joe's a Mets fan. So Joe grew up, Ralph Kiner, come on.
I grew up listening and watching Ralph Kiner. Unfortunately,
absolutely,
we just lost him recently. It was a big loss for the baseball community. But Ernie, you throw these names out there like, you know, Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, Ralph Kiner. I mean, it's amazing. Just give us some of these names and some of these guys that you played with and played against, and, you know, just like who they were like, and how incredible that the game was at that time. I mean, that was the most, probably the greatest era of baseball, 50s and 60s.
Love it.
Yeah, they were really, really remarkable players. What I did with you all, every time they came to Wrigley Field, whatever player was on the team, you know, Willie Stargell with the Pittsburgh Pirates, Roberto Clemente, and all those guys.
Right.
I would come out of the locker room and just wait and watch them take batting practice and work out and how they hit the ball and just being around them, Duke Snider, and I just followed the key players that were playing on the opposing team and learned a lot from them, and that's one of the reasons that, you know, I've had a little bit more of a chance. Coming out of the Negro Leagues into the major leagues, I didn't have a lot of training until I got to the major leagues. So I used that as a model for me to learn how to play the game from other players who have played so well.
Wow.
Now, Ernie, I have to ask you a question. I'm a Brooklyn kid. I grew up in, born and grew up in Brooklyn, and I always, one thing I always said,
you
I
ever heard of
my
Jackie
calling,
Robinson?
I would have loved to have gone to see the Dodgers at Ebbets Field. What was it like playing in Ebbets Field against the Brooklyn Dodgers back then?
Have you ever heard of Jackie Robinson?
I believe I have, yeah.
Well, Jackie Robinson was one of my idols. I followed him. I wanted to be like him. He was the president of the Freedom Bank in Harlem, and he started at affordable housing in Brooklyn, and he just did me work for a chart full of nuts, and he worked for the governor of New York, Nelson Rockefeller. He was just a guy that I followed and wanted to be like him so bad, and Jack and I was born on the same day, different years, and I just thought a lot of him and Roy Campanella. They were just wonderful guys.
Wow. I met Roy Campanella back in the early 70s, and, you know, I got his autograph, and I remember thinking, oh, my God, you know what I'm saying? It, you know, because he, you know, what he went through too was just incredible, you know. And but you know, Ernie, do you have children at all? Like, any, do you have any sons or anything? Or
yes, I do. I have twin boys and a girl. Can you believe that?
Lucky man.
Twin boys and a girl, and what we did, we played the Dodgers the night they were born in California. They were born at in California, and we played the Dodgers the day they were born, and I hit a home run in the game. And can you believe that?
Oh, my God, really? That's
and
awesome.
They were premature children. I brought them home in my pockets because they were, they were so small, but... It was a great joy in my life and a great time in my life to play baseball and have twin boys. Now, one of them played in Brisbane, Australia, and the other one I took them to Korea.
Oh, boy.
To play in a game with Hank Aaron, had an all-star team in Korea, and he invited me and Billy Williams to go, and I went over there, and I invited my son to go over there. And the first game in Taegu, a place called Taegu, I hit a grand slam home run in the first inning.
Oh, my God.
And my son was so happy and so overjoyed about it that it was unbelievable. He took my place in the field, and he still remembers it, and I do, too. It was a great joy and a thrill in my life.
Wow, that's do you have are your kids older now? Do you have grandchildren or anything, or no?
Yes, I do. I have a 7-year-old grandson from the Philippines, and I have a daughter, 16 years old. She's in Dallas.
Wow.
I have two grandkids, and then you know, I see them a lot, and, you know, they don't know a lot of what I did, but I remind them of, you know, what I did. I played baseball and all of that.
Wow.
Ernie, who was some of the pitchers that, I mean, the obvious ones, you know, I'm not going to ask you for those, but who was some of the pitchers that you just, you know, like Tom Seaver always had the guy that he could never get out, and there was always that one guy that somebody just could not hit against. Who was the guy back then that you just didn't want to see when you walked into the box?
Now, who do you think? I'm going to ask you that, and I'll tell you.
Who do Kopech? I think?
Yeah.
Kopech.
Pick one pitcher or two. It was Sandy Koufax. You ever heard of him?
Right.
Greg hit it on the head. Greg said Sandy Koufax. Yeah, good job.
Sandy Koufax. You know where he was from, don't you?
Brooklyn.
From Brooklyn, that's right.
Yeah. Brooklyn Sandy Dodger pitcher. Originally, and then obviously we know how his career went out there, and once they moved out to L.A., but, yeah, I mean, he was the type of guy, I mean, a lefty pitcher, so he must have been, you know, something else. And the sleight of man, not a big guy, but he just had some motion and everything. Besides Wrigley, because I don't even need to ask you that, so let's take Wrigley out of the equation, Ernie. What was your favorite ballpark to play in?
My favorite ballpark I really loved was Philadelphia. You all heard of Philadelphia Phillies?
Oh, Shy Park you're talking about?
The city of brotherly love.
Oh, boy.
Now, somehow, when I went to that city, I mean, things just happened to me. I hit my fourth Grand Slam home run there. I mean, it was always been a park where I played well. It was Shy Park at that time.
Yep, Connie Mack Stadium, yep.
Connie Mack Stadium, and they had a great pitcher named Robin Roberts. You all ever heard of him?
Oh, of course. My God, yeah.
Yeah, Robbie was he was a heck of a pitcher. These are guys that, unfortunately, I've never seen play, but I've seen videos and I've read a lot of things about these guys, and I've
right.
seen their things in the Hall of Fame and everything. So it's, yeah, these are some of the greatest players that have ever played the sport at all.
You know,
now, go ahead, Greg.
Joe, I just wanted to ask Ernie, growing up, Ernie, when you were a young boy yourself, did you have a favorite team that, you know, or a favorite player in baseball that really totally, you know what I'm saying? Did you have somebody that you looked up to?
Well, that's a good question. I was born in Dallas, Texas, and there was no major league team in Dallas at that time. They had a minor league team, but not a major league team.
Right.
So I didn't go to a lot of the games at that time. I didn't see a lot of baseball at that time. But it so happened that I played a game against Jackie Robinson. I had a chance to play against Jackie Robinson, Roy Campanella, Larry Doby, and all those guys. They had a barnstorming tour, and I played with them, and I can never forget that Jackie came up to me in Jackson, Mississippi, said, Ernie, you go play at the major leagues, and I'm going to recommend you to the Dodgers. So I just looked at him, and he said, yeah, I'm going to recommend you to Dodgers. You got good hands. You can do this. And that's what he did. He recommended me to side with the Dodgers when I went in the Army.
Wow. So what ended up happening with that? How come they didn't pick you up?
Well, that's a good question. I played in, I played in Germany, and I played, and just before I got out, one of the sergeants came up and said, what are you going to do, Ernie, when you get out? I said, I'm going to get married and play baseball, and that's what I did. I got married, and I played baseball for the Kansas City Monarchs.
Yep.
And that was a guy named Buck O'Neill. You all heard of him.
Oh, of course, yeah, Buck O'Neill. Yeah. Absolutely.
The Monarchs O'Neill was the manager. That was like the Yankees. He inside me, and I went to the Kansas City Monarchs.
Wow.
But, yeah, the Monarchs was that was the top team in the Negro Leagues. They had all the, they had all the best players come through there. Jackie was one of them. He played with the Kansas City Monarchs. Did you see the movie 42, the new movie that Jackie Robinson came out about a year or so ago, Ernie?
Yes, I did.
What did you think of it?
I sure did.
I was actually watching it last night. I think it's a phenomenal film. What did you think of it?
Yeah, it was phenomenal. You're right. It's phenomenal. It really was phenomenal. All the things that happened there, I had a lot of memories about it, coming up, playing in the Negro League, and it was a wonderful movie. And I'll let you all in on a little secret. Now, I got a producer, director, they want to do a movie about me. What do you all think of that?
I love it. Ernie,
I was just about to ask you that. I was going to say, we got all of these movies about these great baseball players. When are we going to see Mr. Cubbin on the silver screen?
Well, that's what they want to do. They want to do a movie about me. Can you believe that?
I sure can, and I'm going to be the first one in line to see it.
You're up there with those guys to us. I mean, when I think of, Hank Aaron and Willie Mays, I think of you, too.
Came up together. We were all together. Willie Mays was a little ahead of me, and Hank Aaron was a little behind me. But I came up in the middle of that, and they were both born in Alabama, as you know.
Right.
And they came to the major leagues, and I was with the Cubs. So I was kind of the outcast of the group because they played in World Series, and I did not. And I used to talk to them about it. What is it like playing in the World Series? Oh, Ernie, you get just so much pressure on you. And them. They would explain to me. I always asked them, how was it like playing in the World Series?
Wow.
And they would always explain to me how tough it was to play in the World Series, how much pressure on you, and all of that.
I got to ask you, though, did you experience any of the racism, like the stuff that Jackie Robinson had to go through at all? I mean, they put him through the mill, you know what I'm saying? And he overcame so much. I mean, did you experience any of that when you first came from the Monarchs into the majors?
Well, me, Hank, and Willie, I mean, they played in the minor leagues. I didn't play in the minor leagues. I didn't experience a lot of that because I played in Wrigley Field.
Right.
And Wrigley Field had mostly white fans coming to the ballpark.
Right.
And we played all day games as well. So I never experienced any of that. I came along with a guy named Gene Baker. You all remember him?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I heard the name, absolutely.
He came to the Pirates, and they won the pennant in 1960 when Mazeroski hit the home run. But he was on the team. But Gene Baker was a little bit older than me, so he kind of explained a lot of things to me about how to relate to people in the major leagues and what to do and where to go and all of that. So I had that kind of coaching in my life. And Wendell Smith, who was in the movie of Jackie, Wendell Smith was born here in Chicago, and I was around him a lot.
Wow.
And I learned a lot from him.
Yeah.
What I find unbelievable is that, Greg, I didn't mean to cut you off. I apologize. What I find unbelievable is that Ernie Banks could have been on the Brooklyn Dodgers. I know Pee-wee Reese was great, but no, we're talking about Ernie Banks here.
All right.
Ernie, you would have had more than one ring if you ended up with the Dodgers because they had that one in 55, and they had so many close calls, especially against Greg's beloved Yankee team. Ernie Banks played with the Dodgers, they would have had, and they may have even stayed in Brooklyn.
Well, I you're right about that. I lived in L.A., so I was around the Dodgers a lot. We played them a lot. I knew Tommy Lasorda and And it's almost like I played for the Dodgers, really. And I really enjoyed Jim Gilliam was there, and Tommy mm-hmm. Davis and Willie Davis. I just knew all of them. And it's almost like I played for the Dodgers, and I really thought a lot of the Dodgers.
Let me ask you, Ernie, the guys today, when you see these guys today making $20 million a year and all that, how do you feel about that? Do you feel like, oh, my God, I mean, I wish I was playing today, obviously, to make that kind of money, but do they show you older guys respect? I mean, when you walk in a ballpark, do these young kids today even realize, like, you know, like these other players, do they realize, like, this is Ernie Banks? See, I grew up watching you, but a lot of these guys today, you know, are from, you know, maybe were born in the 80s. You follow what I'm saying? I grew up, you know, in the 60s and 70s, but, I mean, them, I'm wondering if they appreciate when they see an Ernie Banks, I mean, you know, walking in, do you get that at all?
Now, what I did now, let me explain it. What I did at all the ballparks I went into, the clubhouses, I would introduce myself, and they would look at me, and they look, and they look. Hi, I'm Ernie Banks. What? And they look at me. But the kids today, I mean, they have their own way of playing. They're smart. They know how to play the game. They have a lot of ability. And I just enjoy watching them. I really enjoy watching these young kids play baseball. And I'm not concerned about the money they make. They make a lot of money, and rightfully so. Because when I played, it was before the Players Association was even started.
Right.
So we didn't have a lot of funds to deal with. In fact, we had two All-Star games. You all remember that?
Yeah.
We had two All-Star games, one in Kansas City and one in New York.
Yeah.
To make money for the pension fund. But today, I mean, I enjoy watching these young players play. Castro, you all heard of Castro?
Oh, yeah. I heard of a guy named Derek Jeter that I love.
Derek Jeter's another great player. That's one of my idols. Derek Jeter is one of my idols. I think a lot of him. I was at an All-Star game in New York, and I came into the locker room, and that's the first person I want to speak to was Derek Jeter. So he was getting dressed. I went over and introduced myself to him. How you doing, Ernie? Da, da, da. And I asked him, I said, what is it like playing in Yankee Stadium? He said, it's loud. And he was like, really loud. I mean, playing at Yankee Stadium was really loud. People got a lot of enthusiasm in that ballpark.
Yeah, but you paved the way for guys like him. I mean, you know, not for nothing. I'm sure if I talked to him and I said, what was it like meeting Ernie Banks? He would probably be like, oh, my God. You know what I mean? It's guys like you that paved the way for guys like him. I mean, I grew up wishing you were a Yankee, you know?
But I almost became a Yankee. I bet Mr. Steinbrenner, I went to see a Yankee game. He was nice to me. Got me a nice seat and a box seat and everything. And they introduced me and all of that. But he thought a lot of me, and I thought a lot of him. And I knew a lot of the players. You know, Reggie was on the team and a lot of them. And I enjoyed being around them. I mean, Yankee Stadium is a very interesting place, a lot of history to it.
Oh, yes.
And I never played there, but I was visited there and saw the ballpark and all the memorabilia. It's a powerful place.
I'm sure, you know, even a Reggie Jackson, they see you coming in there. I mean, not for nothing. You know, you were right up there with home runs. I mean, think about, you know, you came from, you didn't even play in the minor leagues, you came from the Negro Leagues, you played for the Monarchs, and now you hit 512 home runs in the major leagues. You know how hard that is to do? And you did it in an era where, you know, the ball wasn't like today, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, it is, I mean, I think about that. You're right about it. I think about it, and I see this now, and we had a home run club award thing in New Jersey, and it was about 10 of us that hit 500 homers, but now there's a lot more. So most of these young players today have passed us up. Alex Rodriguez.
You hit 500, Joe, 500 home runs. Ernie, you're a shortstop. I mean, obviously you know that, but I mean a shortstop. I mean, to play shortstop alone, you got to be the most athletic guy on the field. I mean, not for nothing. I mean, you're not like some outfielder that they just threw in the outfield that was just a home run hitter. You know what I mean? You were a shortstop, which is, I mean, that's the pivotal position on a team. We get guys on some teams that are shortstop. They can't hit a ball, you know, off a tee, but they're great. But because they're great fielders, I mean, you know, you were, you know, you're a shortstop. They hit 500 home runs. I mean, do you ever sit back and go, "Holy God"?
Yes, I do. I sure do.
Just a little information for you all. Me and Nellie Fox was the last two players that won the MVP award in Chicago. Nellie, you all heard of Nellie Fox?
Of course, absolutely.
Yes, sir.
Absolutely.
Nellie Fox, like I said before at the beginning of the interview, he's throwing out names like they're just average guys, and these are some of the greatest players to ever lace up
cleats and get on the
field. Greg, unfortunately, I could sit here and talk to Ernie for the next 3,000 years and never cover enough ground, but unfortunately, we got to go to break. Ernie, I know your site is erniebanks.net. We have links to it on our site. Is there anything else that you want to plug out there? Any other organizations you're involved with or anything like that?
Yeah, one thing. I'm going to be involved with STEM. You ever heard of STEM? Science, technology, engineering, and math?
Well, now we have.
Now we have, yes.
My goal is to organize a group of kids here in Chicago that's good in math and science and get them to MIT to become nuclear physicists and scientists. That's what
wow.
I want to
do. Wow.
That and is then very I, noble.
Not Barack not. Obama, I'm just saying this now in love. I was voted the Medal of Freedom Award.
Wow.
You remember that?
Yeah,
in November.
Wow.
Wow, Ernie, you are just, you're just a wealth of information, baseball and otherwise, and it's been such a pleasure speaking to you. And if I ever get a chance to shake your hand, I'm going to shake it as long as I can until you pull away from me. You're a legend.
Okay, thank you very much.
Ernie, not only are you a legend, you're a very great talker, great human being. I tell you, you're even a better man than you are a baseball player, and that's saying a lot.
Thank you very much. I'm to New York to see you all.
Oh, I'd love it.
Come over for dinner. We'll make you some macaroni and gravy.
I will do that. I'll come. I'll let you know.
Well, whenever you're in New York, please let us know. We'll take you out to dinner. Frig.
I'll talk to Regina. We'll set it up. Next time you're in town, let's hook up.
Okay,
absolutely.
Thanks a lot.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ernie.
Wow, Ernie Banks. Can you believe it, Greg? One of the greatest baseball players of all time. Talking to me and you. Two schmucks like us.
Holy shit, are we full of shit. You know, we're talking over each other like a crazy man at the end there.
We were like little kids over there, humming, 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 like Cranmer talking to Ernie Banks. But we're going to get right into it. We're going to humming, humming again because we have Brad Locally right now joining us on Extreme Radio. Brad, welcome to the program,
pal. What's up, guys? Thanks for having me.
Bro.
It's good to be here.
No problem. Brad is a one of the regular cast members of World's Dumbest on True TV. Used to be Smoking Gun Presents World's Dumbest. It's been on since 2008. And Brad, I got to tell you, that my kids have like 100 of those episodes on DVR, and I think I've seen every show about 1,000 times each, and I still laugh my ass off.
That's awesome. I have to say, it is funny. We have a ton of kid fans, which when we started making the show, we certainly did not expect. Like, we thought it would just be, you know, everyday people watching the show. I have so many little kid fans, and then they write to me, and all I can think is, I've said so many horrible, disgusting things that have gone to air.
That's why they like it.
Exactly.
I don't
know
why
the world's done it. The radio guys. No, but that is such a funny show.
What?
I was saying, that is such a funny show. I think that's why kids like it. Because you guys say some wacky stuff. I love it, too. It's crazy, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's lots of fun. I mean, listen, you know, the clips they send us, you would almost believe that people were intentionally doing these stupid, because it's just people really are that dumb, and it's not. People are just actually that stupid on a daily basis, and it makes it a really easy living for me. So the dumber people are, the happier Citibank is.
It's always a steady stream.
I want to ask you, though. I want to ask you, though, how do you guys come up with that kind of material? Like, you guys are sharp, you know what I mean? When you guys say stuff, do you guys have to sit there and just to write it all up ahead of time, or do you guys...
Yeah, like, I mean, the way you film a show like that, World's Dumbest, or any of the other ones like that, like, if you see, like, a Best Week Ever on E! Or on MTV when we do stuff that's, you know, like... 50 craziest celebrity moments or something. We'll get like the clips at World's Dumbest a couple days in advance. We'll give them a look through. We'll kind of come up with some ideas. We'll banter them around in the studio as well to see like if I come up with an idea that like me and Danny Bonaducci are going to, we would need to do something together. Then, you know, we have to get us both in the green screen room at the same time. But you get a couple days, you come up with as much as you can. And then you just banter it out. And I mean, the truth is it really is all so extreme that it's not that hard to come up with crap. And then when I get to have punching bags like Tanya Harding and Danny and the rest of them to also fight off of, it's pretty fun.
I love it. Danny Bonaducci, what's it like working with him? Is he a keg of dynamite or is he actually a good guy to, you know, like,
I have to say Danny is one of my favorite people in show business, which was a big surprise to me, as I'm sure with to everybody else. Danny is a ton of fun. You know, he's a crazy personality. He comes in the room, he's wearing 14 necklaces and lizard skin boots, you know, I mean, and he makes, you know, Ryan Seacrest look like a giant. But he's a really fun guy. I mean, my favorite story about Danny is the first time we ever filmed together. We were going to do this clip where these two guys in the clip, I guess it had been wrestling, and they were, like, shirts off fighting, and the one guy just, like, took one swing and slapped the guy, and the guy fell down. So their whole thing was, we're going to bring you and Danny in, and it's going to be Danny versus Brad, and he's known to be this celebrity fighter, and he's really worked out, and you're not, and you're a gay dude, so we're going to have you slap Danny, and he's going to fall down. So I go, great. And I was kind of impressed Danny agreed to that. That's a pretty cool guy. We get in there. And Danny's about to come in. I go, so I'm going to slap Danny. And they're like, yeah, we have to check when he gets here, though. I said, what do you mean? They go, well, we technically didn't run him by it that you're going to smack him. I said, really? You just thought I was going to, like, punch Danny Bonaducci for no fucking reason? and they're like, well, no, we hope he'll be okay with it, but just in case we have a couple extra people in the room. I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to surprise him, so you need to swing it by him. So we get in there, and Danny goes, listen, you guys want, like, me to hit Brad or Brad to hit me? And they're like, yeah. And he goes, well, first of all, it's funnier if Brad hits me. And he turns and he's like, Brad, it's a fake slapping looks stupid, so I really want you to hit me. So he actually then took me in the hallway and had me practice slapping him for, like, 5 minutes, to the point where I think he was a little turned on.
Oh, shit.
Because he kept asking me to do it harder.
You should have dressed in drag. I think he really would have liked it.
Yeah, he's had his moments with that.
I mean, luckily, I hadn't really trimmed my goatee too much, so it did look a little bit like a 70s bush. And,
that's Greg's territory. He likes that.
I love it. I'm from the 70s. I love the 70s bush. Me and Joe should bring that shit back. You know what I mean?
No. I don't want any pubic hair where, like, a pelican could fly out of it. I don't need a rainforest. No. You need to see what you're getting.
There you go, Brad. There's another one for me, Greg. I think it's like 3-2 now, or 4-2.
I disagree. I love it hairy. I think God may put hair down there for a reason. You know what I'm saying? Like, I get it, you know?
Yeah, and man
God made
created the fucking razor for a reason.
Cut it off.
Yeah, I know. A lot of people disagree with me, but maybe, I don't know. Didn't you ever watch old 70s porn? You get turned on, you know what I'm saying? When you see hair.
Well, no, because I just, anytime I look at old porn, all I can think is I'm masturbating to dead people.
I love it. You're right.
None of them made it out of the 80s. But Danny's, just this is the best part, and this actually made it to air. You can find, I think it's in our second season, this episode. So Danny, I'm slapping him in the hallway, and he's getting aroused. And he says, you know, it's actually funnier. But he goes, I haven't asked them, and they'll probably say no, but if we just do it without telling them during the take, if it's good, they'll use it. I said, well, what do you want to do? He goes, I think instead of you slapping me and falling down, it should look like we're about to fight, and then I'm going to grab you and kiss you. and I thought real quick to remember that my health insurance was paid up. And so I thought, that's good. And I said, oh, okay, if you think, I said, I actually think that will be hilarious, but, you know, I never planned on making out with a partridge in my life. So we go back in, we go to do the take, he goes to pretend to slap me, and he grabs me by the face. And normally when you film television, a kiss is just kind of semi-open mouth, and then you put your mouths together and there's nothing. Danny is apparently very much a method actor, because I definitely got tongue, which was not expected.
No way. Are you serious?
I swear to God, Danny Bonaducci stuck his tongue in my mouth, and we were not intoxicated, or had we taken ecstasy.
Oh, shit.
That is great.
It tastes like a
I just like to think he's really committed to the job. And his wife was on set, which made it even creepier. But he is by far probably my favorite cast member, just because he really is willing to do anything if he thinks it's funny, anything if he thinks it makes it a good show. He took a lot of heat. He was still doing his radio show down in Philly at that point. And when that episode aired, he took so much heat from people who called him because he kissed another dude. And he kissed me, especially. Apparently, that made it worse.
Yeah, but you know what? He did it for the show. He did it for a movie. He pulled it off, and it was a fucking pisser. So people are jerk offs, man.
Yeah, no, but I can tell you, Danny Bonaducci is a guy who anytime he walks into the room, you know, he says hello to everybody, learns everybody's name, he treats everybody the same, you know, which especially guys who have been in this business a long time and been up and down tend to get jaded and aren't like that at all, you know. So, yeah, Danny's a good time, plus not the worst kisser.
Did he at least call you that night, or at least text you? Nice kiss.
A little
no, we're dudes.
After that,
that's not how it works. You're thinking about girls. That's why women are exhausting. Dudes never ever call. We just wait to run into each other again, and then we fuck again, and then that's it. We don't call. We just assume we live in the same city. We hang out at the same bars. Eventually, we'll run into each other in the same bathroom. You get it over in 17 minutes. You're done. You move on.
back to the great story. That's fucking funny, man.
Oh my God!
But you know what? It's funny because some of the characters on the show, like the, you know, the cast members. Like Judy Gold with Tanya, it almost seems like there's some ill will going on there. Is that like, you know, kind of just for the show? You guys all get along good?
Well, think about that. You have to remember this about Judy. I've known Judy a long time. I've known her probably over 10 years. We've worked together long before the show. Judy has ill will towards all mankind. It's not just the mentally challenged like Tanya Harding. It's Judy hates pretty much all people, including herself. You know, so in essence, she really doesn't hate anybody. She loves everybody. It's just she's a cranky old Jewish lesbian. So, you know, a Jewish lesbian's kiss feels a lot like a kick to the nuts, basically.
Oh, my God. You should have Tanya Harding do a skit where she runs out and chases Judy with a baseball bat, trying to hit her in the legs and stuff. You know what I mean?
The thing is, though, Tanya is... how can I put this nicely, dumber than a box of hair. And sometimes we're worried if we gave Tanya, like, stunts to do, she would forget that it was a stunt and just have, like, a flashback and start beating a cameraman to death.
Oh, shit. She's really that shot, huh? For real?
Oh, I mean, listen, I'm sure she's a nice lady, but all I know is there was one day I was supposed to film and she had been in there ahead of me. And they delayed me an hour, which is very unlike them. True TV films that show very efficiently. So I was like, okay, guys, like, it's not the end of the world, but, you know, I got other things to go do today. And they go, it's just Tanya. Apparently Tanya had flown in that morning from the middle of Pennsylvania or wherever she lives. And they said, we came up with all these jokes for her to say. Because, you know, some of those people, Danny does write a lot of his own stuff, but, like, Todd Bridges, the Baldwin, you know, all of those guys, a lot of them will have, there's a room of writers then who will write sound bites for them to say, whereas the comics, we write our own stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they go, the problem is we wrote them all out on cue cards. We didn't send them to her ahead of time, and she's having a little trouble reading the cue cards. I said, so, like, what you're telling me is that Tanya Harding can't read? And they're like, it's not that she can't. It's just she kind of keeps breaking a sweat, and we have to stop. And she stumbles over a word if it's, like, more than one syllable. I was like, oh, okay, practices. So she's completely, I mean, literally, she hit her head on the ice enough times to make sure that, you know, I'm pretty sure Shih Tzu would do better on the SAT.
Well, listen, how smart could somebody be to do what she did anyway? I mean, think about it. You know, you think you're really, I mean, to come right at a girl, you don't even wear a mask. You come over to your batter in the legs, you know what I'm saying?
I mean, she's definitely smart, you know? And she's still not, I mean, listen, if you only do one stupid thing your whole life and you never read a book and you never pick up a newspaper, you know, she basically, at 8 years old, they realized she could balance on both ankles. You know, and they shoved her out there on the ice, and now she's just never done anything else. God love her.
But she's had a few celebrity boxing matches, though.
Right? Well, let's be honest, she's lovely. Every time I've ever run into her, she's lovely, she's smiley. But, you know, most mentally challenged people are lovely. It's very rare that you run into, like, a totally retarded person who's an asshole.
Does she hit the bars with Bonaducci later or something or anything or no?
No, I mean, I don't even know. She lives apparently like in the middle of nowhere off the grid. Like, she's basically one of those doomsday preppers.
Yeah,
she's like, it's, you know, where they all say they're preparing in case there's zombies, but it's really just they hate black people. It's all thinly veiled. Like, they're like, well, no, just in case something happens. I'm like, you're real white. You're real white.
Apocalypse.
Oh, shit. I hate those people. Everything's a conspiracy, right?
Oh, I know. No, it's true. Sometimes my friends and I will turn on if Doomsday Preppers is on, is my favorite one. I don't even know if that show's on my network. I probably shouldn't say something about that. But we literally will play a drinking game where you only have to drink until one of them makes a not-so-thinly-veiled racial statement. And you can never get drunk playing Doomsday Preppers because literally you're like, oh, look, here's the new guy. Here's Roy. Let's start drinking until, oh, Roy already called the president the N-word. Okay, we got to put that in.
Oh, Roy.
Oh, those people make me laugh. They make me laugh.
Yeah, they're like, oh, we're waiting for zombies. And I'm like, are zombies scared of swastikas? Is that why they're all behind you like that?
Hey, Brad, we got about 2 minutes till we got to go to break. I wanted to make sure we get the plugs out there. I'm looking at your site now. You're going to be in Hell's Kitchen, New York City, on Neck of the Woods,
I'll be in New York City this coming weekend to host a charity event, the Miss Hell's Kitchen pageant. And then coming up in the next couple weeks, out on Fire Island in the Pines, I'm opening up the season there on Memorial Day weekend, that Saturday of Memorial Day weekend. And then the following Saturday, the last Saturday of May, in the Pocono Mountains at Rainbow Mountain Resort, I'll be doing a show there. And then, of course, we've got World Dumbest on True TV's new episodes will roll out in a month or two for our summer season, and that's Sunday nights at 9 are the new episodes.
Oh, cool. So make sure you guys check out Brad Loekle. I'm going to spell that last name, LOEKLE.com. And we have the links right there in the site. Also on Facebook, he's Brad Loekle as well. And Twitter, the same name, right, Brad? You're the same all around on all the social media?
Yeah, I'm the same across the board. Easy to find me.
All right, man. Brad, listen, that was a fucking pisser, man. Excellent.
Well, you're
excellent
guys. You guys are great.
So
you're a great guy. Great guy. I love it.
Thanks for joining me and Greg on Extreme Radio tonight, and we'll be back right after this quick message.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
Hey, it's Rita from Mobwise, and you're listening to Greg and Joe from Extreme Radio, and you know what? You better listen. Or else.
Hey, this is Dan Hardy from the UFC. You're listening to Greg and Joe, Extreme Radio.
Hi, I'm Shannon Sharp, Fitness RX for Men. Bam! Fitness RX for Men is the ultimate men's print publication, website, and extreme radio show. More than just fitness, we'll also bring you the best news in sports, entertainment, and lifestyle. Fitness RX for Men was established first as a magazine in 2003. Be sure to visit our website, www.fitnessrxformen.com, and check out our social media pages for up-to-the-minute news and tips every day. It's your ultimate prescription for the perfect body. Visit fitnessrxformen.com today.
Listen for MD Radio on the Voice America Variety Channel.
That's Muscular Development Radio.
Every Monday, your host, Sean Ray, will take you inside the world of bodybuilding and health and fitness. The show will feature Hall of Fame bodybuilders, trainers, judges, and the future champions of tomorrow. Plus, you'll be invited to participate in our call-in Ask the Pros feature. And our nutritional spotlight will feature products that can help you achieve your fitness goals. MD Radio is broadcast live Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Hey everybody, this is Ron Bumblefoot Thaw, and you're listening to Joe Piattaro and Greg Valentino on Extreme Radio. Yeah!
Oh, how the fuck are you? Max Cook here. Let me tell you something. I had a lot of fun talking to Joe and Greg. A couple of top-shelf margaritas, those two. Now, you're going to do me a favor. You're going to go to YouTube, and you're going to type in Max Cook, M-A-X-K-O-C-H, you strunts. And you're going to watch my videos, and you're going to fucking like them, or we're going to have a problem.
This is Big Andy, and you're listening to Greg and Joe on Extreme Radio, and you better fucking listen.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
Hey, what's up? Mario Lopez here, and we're at Gio's Brooklyn Boxing Club doing a photo shoot for Fitness RX for Men.
You are listening to Extreme Radio, presented by Fitness RX for Men magazine, with hosts Greg Valentino and Joe Piattaro. If you have a question or comment for our show today, please call 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You can also send an email to jpiattaro@advancedresearchmedia.com. Now, back to Extreme Radio.
And make sure you call us up and say hi. Let us know if you like us, if you hate us, if you think we're somewhere in the middle. Definitely a great segment by Brad Locally from True TV's World's Dumbest, and he's also a stand-up comic. Gave us some pretty fucking funny insight on what goes on the set of World's Dumbest, right, Greg?
Dude, I fucking love the Bonaducci shit, because Bonaducci's one of us, Paul. He's a mad guinea, and he's fucking whacked. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he's into his drink and his juice. So he's
dude, you ever hear some of the stories? Though he would say he's so drunk he wind up like waking up and he was in a dumpster and shit like that. You know what I'm saying?
Wild though? The guy gets so hammered, but he's jacked and he fucking juices up and he trains like an animal and he's fucking hammered all the time.
Dude, who was it that he fought in the ring? Who was it?
Canseco.
Brady?
I think it was Canseco.
Did he fight Canseco too? No.
Pretty sure.
I think he fought Greg. I know he fought Greg Brady. And
he may have fought Greg Brady too. He's done it a few times. Like fucking Tonya Harding's done it a few times. Danny's done it also.
Yeah, but Tonya Harding uses a bat. No, I like Bonaducci. You know, because Bonaducci's nuts, bro. He's fucking whacked. You know what I'm saying?
He would be fucking great. I'm going to see if we can get him on this fucking show because he would be a fucking pisser on this. Because he's a fucking lunatic, man. He'd fucking roll right with this stupid shit that we put out over here on this fucking excellent fucking crazy motherfucking program. So fucking, that's the fucking story, Rory, with fucking Brad. Ernie Banks, that was a fucking, two opposite ends of the spectrum. You know, me and you were into sports,
right now,
but we love laughing, so.
I bet you right now Ernie Banks could play shortstop at three of the Mets or even the way Jeter's playing, even the Yankees. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, come on. You can't
take over right now.
You know? Don't piss on your captain, bro. You're going to miss
him. Listen, I love Jeter, but he's 6'47". If you know, I'm not saying get rid of him or anything like that, but give him a break. Maybe he needs to fucking take a rest a little bit. But you can't be 6'47".
No, I know. Hey, listen.
I'm not dissing him.
I know.
You know what I mean?
I don't want to get into a total fucking sports conversation.
He needs a rest or a shot of test.
But yeah, that, you know what? That would be fucking great. You know, he's getting up there. He probably has a fucking 185 fucking level. He needs a little push.
Albert Pujols has got to be doing it. He couldn't hit the ball for the last 2-3 years. You could put it on a tee. He couldn't hit it anymore, and he was getting soft looking. All of a sudden, he's jacked looking. You know what I'm saying? I don't know.
All right. Hey, we're getting a caller here. I got an IM from Mike. Mike, you want to put the caller through?
Hello? Yes, hello. This is Peter Griffin.
Peter Griffin. Okay, Peter, go ahead. What do you want to tell us?
Peter Griffin, G-R-I-F-F-I-N.
Yeah, I heard you. Go ahead, Peter. I know who you are. I've seen you.
Where have you seen this guy?
Peter Griffin from Family Guy, apparently.
You like ha-ha Jerry Seinfeld funny or Elaine Boozler, God bless her, she's trying funny?
Seinfeld funny. Go ahead. Somebody fucking with us.
Somebody
had sex with your mother last night.
Oh, you did? How was she?
Dude, that's a sounding board, I think.
Yeah, somebody's pulling out the fucking dick here. I'll go along with it, man. I don't block people on Twitter, and I don't hang up on people.
You know what I haven't had in a while?
What?
Is this Sean Ray? Sean, is that you?
I think it might be.
Britney Spears.
Sean, hey, Sean, I know we're kicking your show's ass, but do you have to fucking do this? Can't you just come on?
Yeah, I'm fine, so.
Peter Griffin.
Silver Spoons.
What do you say?
No, I don't watch Silver Spoons. I don't give a shit about Ricky Schroeder.
And don't call me Peter. That's my slave name. From now on, call me Kichwa Kembo.
What the hell on God's name are you listening to?
Do you watch Family Guy at all, Greg?
No.
Oh, it's fucking hysterical, bro.
No, dude, I don't watch television.
Yay, Titan Shrew.
All right, Peter, I think we're going to let you go now. Because,
all right, Peter.
I appreciate you calling, Peter Griffin, and we will talk to you soon. Next time, make sure Stewie gets on the line with us.
Goodbye, Sean.
Goodbye,
Sean. Go tell Bob.
Hey, you know what? I asked for a caller, I got a caller. I can't complain. Beggars can't be
Sean Ray, buddy.
Greg, we got a few minutes left in the show. Let's put this fucking bastard out with a fucking nice, big, fucking sticky load, man. What do you want to talk about the last few minutes of the program? What's on your mind, pal?
Well, nothing really, bro, to be honest with you, fuck everybody. No, I'm just kidding you. Same bullshit, you know? I mean, just over here fucking doing my normal routine, you know, just trying to freaking squirrel, trying to get a nut, you know? God forbid we get any nuts over this way in the form of green, you know what I'm talking about?
We get nuts all the time. We get tight in our fucking keister, bro.
Dude, what was that? Was that somebody with a sounding board, right?
Yeah, it was one of the fucking apps or something where you can do this characters on there. Who cares? It's fucking fun. But next week, we're going to have Big Ange on, bro.
Dude, Big Ange. Bro, did you hear what he said? One of her relatives went missing and all of a sudden she appears all like fucking...
Yeah.
Dude, that sounds like... I remember Howard Stern used to always swear that... what the hell's her name there? Fucking, I know her really well. I can't think of
Nicole Bass.
You know, yeah, Nicole Bass. She used to swear that Nicole Bass was really a man. But yet, I met her because I knew Rob Fuchs, and not my kid's fucking stepfather, by the way. But that's his name. But I knew Rob Fuchs, and Rob Fuchs, she was actually a really pretty girl, Nicole Bass. People don't realize
she got all juiced up and shit.
Yeah, dude, she got all juiced up. And then something happens to the voice, you know, and like, even began to come over on me.
Yeah, she was all, she used to be in the WWE and shit. She was all over the fucking place. She was a mess, though. But what would you, all right, if you had the, Mike, you're on the mic. I want to ask you a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Uh-oh.
All right. Do you know who Nicole Bass is, the old female bodybuilder? She's been Howard Stern in wrestling?
It sounds familiar. I think I know who you're talking about, yeah.
Okay, picture her. Now, if you had to take a pick, gun to your head, who would you fuck, her or Big Ange from Mob Wives?
No.
You have to fuck
that.
One.
I had to pick one?
Yeah.
I'd take the one from the WWE.
I think I would too, Joe. Even though you know me, I'm a little bit against...
You know what? I think I would have to fucking call a fucking Triple Lindy on that and go with you guys, yeah.
Dude, I'm telling you, because I love Big Ange. I don't want to bring Rank it down, but that's just, it's just, I don't know, at least the other one is like firm and you know what I mean? And she's wacky. Nicole Bass, she put me in a headlock once and almost fucking choked me out for real, you know, playing around. I was like, holy shit, you know, I can't breathe, bro.
I saw her when I used to do those Howard Stern gigs, I fucking was standing next to her. She's fucking, you and John, I'm not telling you, you know, she's fucking tall. I mean, she had heels on, but she was tall. I mean, she's a big fucking broad in height, besides with.
Dude, she had a head the size of a basketball.
Oh, she was a monster, bro.
She put me in a headlock. Yo, I swear to God, she was playing around with me. She put me in a headlock, just fooling around. But she caught me just right. You know, lifted me off the floor. You know what I'm saying?
I was a natural
bodybuilder, so I only weighed about $160, you know. I was really built, but I was, you know, I wasn't heavy. And, dude, I'm telling you, I was like, holy shit, this chick's going to choke me out. You know what I mean?
She had those big silicone tits squeezing your fucking head on the other side.
Yeah, I reached back and grabbed her twat and she let go of me. You know what I'm saying?
You grabbed the fucking
twat.
Dude, we're going to be fucking out of time, so we're going to have to say good night and good luck to the fucking listening audience. I want to thank, once again, of course, Ernie Banks and Brad Locally, and let's not forget Peter Griffin, Craig. We did get a call from a famous television star, Peter Griffin, the star of Family Guy. So
who the fuck is Peter Griffin? That's the guy. That's the Gouda guy. Said that the guy was calling.
Yeah, yeah. You just watch Family Guy. You can't.
Yeah, I didn't.
The star.
I never
he's the father
shit,
on the show.
A cartoon,
but,
ain't it? I can't watch that shit.
It's fucking funny, bro. We're gonna get out of here now. Next week, Extreme Radio. Make sure you check us out. Big fucking Ange, Mike. Thanks again. Another wonderful fucking job as usual. FitnessRxForMen.com and the Extreme Radio Facebook page. We'll see you motherfuckers next week.
Thank you for listening this week. Greg and Joe will be back next Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel with another edition of Extreme Radio. Now, go home and get your shine box.